Nice to meet you. Thank you. So, okay, so I have a few questions for you. Not a whole lot, but I do have a few. Do you know any of the other, there's a temple president that lived in Phoenix named, he was temple president. Okay, doesn't matter. So I have some questions for you. The first one is just sort of some general information, like where you grew up. Do you know what the point of this is?
I'd like to know.
There are some amazing church leaders who have done tremendous work. It's sort of an unsung hero type of work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they go unrecognized. So what I'd like to do is get an idea of some of the state presidents. Obviously, there are a million of those. Temple presidents, and I've got a few of those. But you served two mission presidencies, so...
Three. Well, one was acting president.
Okay. Perfect. We'll get to that. So, for me, I thought you were like a two-in-one. But now you're a three-in-one, which is even better.
It's a two-and-a-half.
Two-and-a-half. Okay. So, Joseph L. What's your middle name?
Layton, L-A-Y-T-O-N.
Like Layton, Utah?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's so. Did you grow up there?
No.
Why Layton?
My father's Joseph Layton.
Ah.
I'm Joseph Layton Jr.
Nice. How'd you get Bishop?
Bishop.
Was your wife's name, or your name? Excuse me. Your father's name?
Joseph Layton Bishop.
Joseph Layton Bishop. You're the second. Okay. I'm sorry. All right. So, where did you grow up?
Delta, Utah.
Where's that?
In the center of the state.
Okay.
It used to be the hub of the universe until I grew up a little more.
I bet. And how many siblings do you have?
None. I have a sister who passed away.
Oh.
When I was two and she was four.
Sister died at four. Was she ill?
Scarlet fever.
That's awful. Oh, that must have been horrible.
I was two. I don't remember at all.
Yeah, but still. Gosh. Okay, and where did you go to school?
Delta High School.
Delta High? Okay.
Ranch Agricultural College in Cedar, which is now Southern Utah State.
Okay.
University.
Now it's Southern Utah. I'm sorry, Southern what?
Southern Utah State University.
University, okay.
You better check.
Something like that. Oh, I will. I'll check everything. All right. And where did you serve your mission?
Argentina.
You served in Argentina. And then you were a mission president in Argentina. Nice.
But I served there as a young man. It was the Argentine mission. Just one mission.
Argentine mission. How old were you? 19?
No. I think I was 21. Back then, the Korean conflict, you're too young to, there was a Korean conflict way back when, and young men could not go on missions. They had to serve in the military first, or join the reserve and go to college. I chose that, but that was 3 years into
the conflict.
Can I ask you a couple of questions?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I've had some amazing experiences, highly spiritual, that I don't talk about all the time.
Yes.
For obvious reasons.
Yes, sir.
There is some things that I think might help struggling mission presidents.
Thank you.
I'd be happy to go into all that, but I've had so many of those things. This might be a long interview, and you probably have to write about 15 people in your article, which is fine.
It's okay, though. I will take the most important parts, and perhaps your interview will be separate from others.
Okay. Don't misunderstand. I just want to make sure that as it's written, it doesn't come off sounding like I've had these experiences and you haven't.
Okay.
I want to be clear that I know the hand of the Lord in my life from way back when.
Okay.
The patriarch of blessing is very specific, numerous things, and they've all happened. So I know that my life has been...
Have you thought about writing a book?
I've written three books. Peace Be Unto Thy Soul.
Do you mind if I write this one? No. I'm so sorry. Peace Be Unto Thy Soul.
Well, my first book was The Making of a Missionary, which I wrote after my experience as president of Buenos Aires North Mission.
And it was called what?
The Making of a Missionary, published by Bookcraft.
You know, this is very good.
Which makes me appreciate you so much, because you obviously are a skilled writer, and you wouldn't have a job.
Right.
And my writing is
just
laborious.
That's why we have editors.
Is that it?
That's exactly right.
And you're an editor.
Okay, no, I'm not an editor. But I do write, yeah. Okay, so that's the second book. The third book?
30 Ways. To enjoy. No. Man, I forgot my title.
Oh, come on!
30 Ways to Love Your Mission.
To Love Your Mission.
Oh. Covenant called and said, with the new young men going out, they wanted a little bit lighter. And so I wrote the book. And it's out there.
Nice. And that's the covenant.
Yes.
And who did Peace Be Unto Thy Soul?
I did that. That was after my wife's death.
Your wife died?
Uh-huh. My first wife.
Oh. When was that? I am so sorry to hear that.
That was 12 years ago.
Oh, my. But you've remarried?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Self-published. Wow. You're self-published?
No.
You didn't self-publish Peace Be Unto Thy Soul?
No. That was Covenant.
That was Covenant.
Two books were Covenant. And one from Bookcraft.
Bookcraft, okay. Was your wife ill?
My wife was alive for the first book.
Okay.
Second book I wrote because of her death. It was a niche book to try to help those who are grieving.
Wow.
Going through the process.
That's impressive.
You have to read the book, find out if it's impressive.
Oh, I will read the book, I promise you.
Oh, okay.
Wow, okay. All right, so who's your wife now?
I am divorced, but we're getting remarried.
Okay. That's it.
She was the one I was going to bring here.
Oh!
She...
I would love to have met her.
She would love to have met you. I married her because I went to the temple with her, and long story short, had an experience in the temple that I was to marry her. I knew she was struggling. She's had all kinds of problems. Wayward husband. And
like husband. A cheating husband kind?
Mm-hmm.
I had one of those.
Oh,
they're everywhere.
Yes, we are. So there was a divorce. She divorced me. That was about 6 months ago. She ended up here. She has a large family here. I ended up here, different reasons. And we've since gotten together and planning to get married.
And when are you getting married?
We haven't set a date,
but
within the next... I don't want all of that.
No, that's
just, you.
Yeah. What a wonderful story. So who was your first wife?
Bishop. From Delta, Utah.
Really? Was she like a childhood sweetheart?
Yes.
Was she your wife during the Buenos Aires North Mission?
Yes.
Well, then she would have been at the MPC too.
Yes.
Okay, she only died 12 years ago. Oh,
and she sang in the Tabernacle Choir for many, 20 years.
Wow. So you were in Salt Lake for a long time.
In and out. I had missions and stuff.
So, okay. General information. So you were married. And what is your education?
We started on that, didn't we, when I interrupted you?
No, please. That's why I have things written down. I normally have a laptop, but...
Yeah. Well, Associate of Arts degree at Southern Utah State University. bachelor's and master's degree at BYU.
And?
Spanish, majored in Spanish, minored in French.
Okay.
PhD at Claremont.
Where's Claremont?
C-L-A-R-M-E-N-T.
Huh?
It's in Claremont, California.
PhD in what?
Education. It's not an EDD, it's a PhD.
Yeah. Dr. Bishop.
I am you.
All right, Dr. Bishop. That's awesome. Good for you.
Good for
okay,
you.
So when did you finish your doctorate?
Well, you're giving me the dates. Let me preface that by saying, I'm now 85, soon be 86.
Go
my
ahead.
Memory is...
Not to worry. I'm sure it's still with us.
Let's see. Probably, I ended up with my degree there probably around 75.
Still married?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
We were married almost 46 years.
Wow.
And then she had the audacity to die.
She just kicked the bucket on you.
Like that.
Poor
she
little
didn't
butter.
Ask me.
She didn't ask permission?
Nothing.
What is wrong with that?
I don't know.
Hmm. Bless your heart. What was your first calling in the church? You were never a bishop, were you? Oh. Really? Can I write that down? Bishop. Okay, bishop. You know, I think you might need a whole article just for yourself. But this is so much more than...
Do you have a schedule at 4 o'clock?
Here? I don't.
Do you want a little more background?
Yeah.
When I was a young man, I had my patriarchal blessing when I was like 16, 17. Patriarch in Delta, Utah.
Okay.
Who says, we was...
Oh, right.
One of the old great men.
Yeah.
My blessing said to me, I have it in my mouth, said to me, study the gospel because you will be called to preach the gospel not only in the Wasatch Front, but in the nations of the world. Now keep in mind, at that time, later, I couldn't go on a mission because they weren't allowing young men
right.
to go on a mission.
Because North Korea.
Yeah. So I was in the AF ROTC, wanted to be a fighter pilot. The process was you went to school, you signed a contract with the Army, with the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the 3 years of college, you went to a summer camp. I went there. The Air Force Base in Las Vegas, Nellis.
Nellis, yes.
And then the following year, you finish your college, you the university, you get a degree in whatever, and then you sign up for four, you've already signed up for four more years in the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, I was engaged to be married to another girl that I'd met at college.
But not.
She went to be one. Well, she was 2 years younger than I. So my mother had put in my. You kind of enjoy some of this because I enjoy it. If I enjoy it, some others.
I'm interested.
My mother put into my suitcase the Book of Mormon and my patriarchal blessing. One evening, I opened up the Book of Mormon. My patriarchal blessing fell out. That's when I read that I was to go on a mission. And that night in my prayers, I said, it's okay, I know I'm not going to be able to go on a mission because of where I was. I was then 3 years in college.
Okay.
So I was, 21, probably, and engaged.
Mm-hmm.
Contract with the Air Force for another 4 years after I spent that year. By then, I'd probably have children. Obviously, not going to go on. So I counseled the Lord, told him it was all right. About a week later, Eisenhower, who was then president, you may remember some of this.
I don't remember that. However, but historically, I'm not too far off.
Yeah. So, he got a budget of the Air Force, and the cadets there at Nellis were all washed out because he cut in the budget.
Right. Were you a washout?
I was washed out.
Washed
out.
Mm-hmm. Funny how that works, huh?
Yeah. Then a week later, I got a letter from the Army for my induction notice. I was to go to Fort Ord in Salt Lake, and there go through medical examination and whatever. And then I would be in the Army, in the infantry. Went up there, the young man who did the medical assessment was obviously just out of med school, trying to start a practice. And they had washed me out for frivolous reason. It's a little nub of a rib, an extra rib. Can't think of the medical name.
That's okay. Did they wash you up because of that?
Well, they had to have something to say, and I passed 5 flight visits. So I had my, for some reason, I'd taken my x-ray with me of that. So there was a little thing on the form said, have you ever been disqualified for active or inactive duty? Yes, checked yes, because of that. I thought maybe the AFROTC might be considered inactive duty, because I'd signed a contract, they had a contract with me.
Can you bring that up? You're 21, right?
Yeah. So, I showed him the rib, and he said, okay, I'm going to put you 4F, which meant I was unqualified physically to serve.
Okay.
Then come to see me, give me his card, I'll take out that rib, and then you will heal.
Okay.
And a month or two down the road, 1A, and you'll go in the service.
Okay.
And I said, if you put me 4F, you probably won't see me again. I was kind of laughing at it. Yeah, I will. 4F. Went home to my bishop, who is a cervical rib. Cervical is the word.
Cervical rib, okay. So it's an upper rib.
Yeah.
Right there under.
Right
cervical
here.
Collar. Okay, clavicle.
I don't know.
There you go.
Maybe so. It's somewhere else. It's
okay.
Went to my bishop and said, I can now serve a mission. And back then, the bishops didn't track the age of the youth like they do today. Mm-hmm. And he said, are you old enough to go on a mission? Yeah, I had 3 years of college. Oh, good. 2 months almost to the day that I counseled the Lord. Oh, my girlfriend gave me my ring back. She broke the engagement.
Because
I just didn't feel right about when. It's not that we were fussing with each other. We loved her.
Terrible.
But I couldn't decide when. So she said, okay. And gave me back the ring. Well, that was taken care of.
Wow.
So now you see what I'm saying. And it says, nations. I've served a mission, 2 missions in Argentina. Uh-huh. I was the area welfare agent for Central America. I served in Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, Panama.
And you were blessed to be able to learn Spanish so well. Do you speak like a native?
No, I'm not.
Well, did you then? Well, your Spanish was really good.
My Spanish was pretty good.
Way beyond passable.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, yes. Right. I think that's fair
so
to say.
So, when you served
as... Do you want this interview in Spanish?
Oh, God, no. Maybe, but Spanish
did you serve a mission over there?
No, but I lived there.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, it's
we ought to be writing this article for you.
No, hardly. There's nothing special about me.
Oh, I don't know. That doesn't sound not unspecial.
Wow.
Is that a good word?
Unspecial, yes. That's a very good word. Okay, so you served that after the MTC, correct?
Yes.
What years did you serve? Would you call it a welfare mission in Central America? What was your actual calling?
A missionary.
Missionary.
With the title of welfare agent for Central America.
And what year was that?
That was 3 years. And that's, let me go backwards.
Okay.
Came out of mission in 83.
Came out of what mission in 83?
Well, I was President of Weber State.
Oh, good God. President of Weber State? I'm so sorry. I am so unprepared for this interview. You were President of Weber State?
College at that time.
Well, okay. Now it's university, right?
Uh-huh.
Weber State College.
My task was to get a ready for university status against all the opposition.
Well, apparently you did well.
I have left there a lot of blood. If you still go there, you can see my blood everywhere.
Okay.
Anyways, so, and there's another experience of how I was called, President Kimball. We won't go into that, his background. I had a special call.
From President Kimball. Okay, and was President of Weber State, was that before or after the MTC?
Well, the sequence is I was at Weber State, called to be mission president.
Weber State, called to be mission president in Argentina.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Buenos Aires, born. I'm surprised you don't know that's the best mission in the whole church.
Is it? Who would have thought? Okay, and then, so you went to Weber State.
Then I came back.
During your stay at the Weber State College, you were called to be mission president in Argentina.
Correct.
Okay. And you served there from?
79, let's see.
I hate numbers. I can't remember.
I think it's 79, 81. Anyway,
do you serve 3 years or
three
two
years?
So 79, 80, 81, 82.
82.
To 82, okay. And then?
Came home.
Home to Delta?
No. Home then was Salt Lake. I left Delta when I left to go on a young mission.
Okay.
Didn't go back.
Okay, so then it was Salt Lake. Okay. After Argentina. Okay.
And received a call from President Hinckley one day, called the president of the MTC in Provo.
That's quite a wow.
Not really.
You don't think it was a wow?
Well, I didn't at the time. I do now. I look back and say, wow, that's interesting.
So, at the MTC, how many missionaries would come? How many missionaries did you have in your mission overall in Argentina?
Depended on the month. It fluctuated according to the
coming and going.
Yeah.
Okay, so what was an average?
About 180.
180 missionaries? Okay.
No, I could be wrong on my figures.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be a direct quote.
Okay.
So your callings leading up to your, okay, so I have that. And do you remember any favorite missionaries that you had in Argentina? You don't have to call them by name, but just by story.
And I'd be, I won't say reluctant, but to name one is to offend two.
Others. Oh, to offend two. Okay. So is that...
It's just...
I understand. Friends. So would you prefer not to...
Let me refer to those as I tell you about the spiritual experiences that happen in the mission. And I'll refer to them as two sister missionaries did such and such.
Okay.
Would that work for you?
Sure. Yeah, I don't need any names. Go ahead.
So the sequence, we've got the MTC.
This is before the MTC, Argentina.
Which Argentina? I was a young missionary.
Not as a missionary, as a mission president. You're talking about your as a mission president in Buenos Aires North Mission.
Right.
Two favorite missionaries, or two a story about two
okay.
sister missionaries that was one of
okay.
your favorite experiences.
So as I relate, let's take them one at a time in terms of this mission, then this mission, and this
okay.
mission.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. Do you want to talk about your mission as a missionary first? Is that the story you were about to tell me? Or as a mission
I was just trying to get the sequence for you.
Okay, go ahead.
So, was with me for both the MTC and the with the Argentine mission.
Okay.
After the mission, let's see, now I'm going to get it. Came back from the mission, and then I served at the MTC. After the MTC, President Monson called me and said, back to some of my, President Kimball was special to me because he called me under special circumstances to be a mission president, knowing well.
To Weber State College?
From Weber State College.
From Weber State College to Buenos Aires North.
Right.
Mission. Okay.
When I came back as president, let's see, let me back up. When I became president of Weber State, on the Board of Regents, it's the governing board for the universities.
Yes, sir.
There is always a member of the church, a general authority on that board.
Okay.
That man became my first contact. When I was president of Weber, I had a problem. If I had a question about what would the regents say about this or that, I would call my first contact, which was Thomas Monson. So we had that association.
And he was an apostle at the time.
He was not. He was an apostle. He's been an apostle forever, 50 years.
So he was an apostle.
He was an apostle. He wasn't a...
He was a...
I don't think he was
a quorum of the 12. No, I think he was...
Yeah.
Okay, presidency.
Later, Harold B. Lee, I met Harold B. Lee at a courtesy call when the president of the Weaver or any university would go around. You'd meet the governor, you'd meet the blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
So met Harold B. Lee, and shortly afterwards, Harold B. Lee died.
Okay.
Then President Monson became counselor in the first presidency. And Neil Maxwell became my first contact in the Board of Regents.
At Weber State?
Yeah, when I was at Weber State.
Okay.
Does that help?
Oh my gosh. No, that clears up a lot of stuff. Okay. This isn't going to be able to be put in one little story, so.
I know.
Okay, so?
So we had, in terms of church service,
mm-hmm.
we had the MTC. Before the MTC, we had Buenos Aires North,
right.
Then the MTC. Then later, I went over to BYU, was a professor over there for 10 years.
You went to BYU as a professor for 10 years after the MTC, which was 19...
Let's see, 86. 83, 86.
Eight.
Yeah, about 80.
You were 83 to 86 at the MTC.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm confused, sorry. This is so much more than I expected. Okay, so 83 to 86 at the MTC, and then you went to BYU as a professor of what?
I was in the education department.
Okay.
I was actually given an assignment, but an administrative assignment as executive director of a consortia of six school districts. So really great funds for them. My background is instructional strategies and management.
Is that your PhD?
That's after the PhD.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Can't hold a job, you just keep bouncing around.
Well, you've certainly been blessed financially to be able to Yeah. Well, I think the Lord provides for those who serve. Wouldn't you say?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Maybe not financially.
Doesn't matter.
It sure provides.
Yeah.
Which is another story. I just got out of the hospital 3 days ago. Had a miraculous thing happen there. Do you have the time?
I have time, yes.
When my second wife got the divorce. She was frustrated and about life and things. She had a real problem with any man trusting.
Why?
Because her husband was a...
Cheater?
Yeah.
Is that all? Just a cheater?
Is that all?
I don't need to write that down.
No?
No. Well, it's not pertinent information.
No.
But, okay, so she had...
a cheating husband, right?
Yes.
And she had trouble trusting any men or just priesthood leaders or...
She now trusts me and loves me.
What changed?
The divorce.
Hmm.
I was there. I had with her, she's a nurse.
Okay.
Retired, of course. She's 82. I'm 85.
You were out the cradle there. Is she as beautiful as your first wife was?
This was another one in the spirits. I told her there wasn't any... We weren't going to... The relationship wasn't going anywhere. I told her. And we went to the temple because she had time and I didn't know what else to do with her. And in the temple, I had this...
Obedience?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's remarkable.
It is remarkable. Married her, knowing that she had all these problems. I don't need to put it out on her so much, but there's no doubt she had serious problems. And we struggled. And finally one day she kept wanting a divorce from day one. And I could give it time, we'll work it out, we can, you know. But then it finally happened. And I left St. George, she left St. George. I felt like I'd been hit with a truck because I lost all my friends, I was on the High Council in the state doing a project and missionary work that was meaningful to me and changing things there. It was well-conceived. So that happened. She also saved my life, incidentally. I had the pain and I said, okay, what's this pain? And she said, give me your hand. And took care of my hand, and it was clammy. She stood me up, dug in her purse, pulled out an aspirin, chewed this, come with me, sat here, took me to the hospital. They didn't let me out of the hospital. They took me right into it. Had open heart surgery, quadruple bypass.
Holy cow. Wow.
Saved my life.
Apparently she did.
So there we are, a few years later, and she wants to divorce me, so 5 minutes, okay, we'll work. Now I'm at limited funds, because the bubble burst, I lost a home, it was worth over $1 million, I thought. And money to, ended up in jail, who was one of my missionaries. Yeah, hurt my feelings.
Yeah, I bet that did.
I'm giving you too much information.
Was he a missionary in Argentina?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So the divorce thing happened, and then she came here, and I came here. But I came here because I had a son here. She came here because of family, but we weren't going to get together.
Right.
So I came here, and I found it's a little reserved community for adults. Old people go there.
I can't see you there, but okay.
I can't. I really like it. Not because there's a big pool and there's two pools. There's golf and I don't golf. There's pickleball. I don't pickleball. There's all these things, but the people are so friendly. That's what I like about it. And there's a restaurant there and a little post office. And it's like a little teeny.
Like a little town. Village. Okay.
And
all
it's
right.
Cute.
Good.
So I came to town and said, I need to go find a cardiologist. My son knew a medical doctor here, and I called him, and he said, this one over here. Went to see him, and now I left my cardiologist all through
The one in St. George?
Yeah. The thoracic surgeon there that operated on me was, he nipped my artery into my heart and sutured it shut. So right after the operation, I was in serious trouble.
Oh my gosh.
It was the cardiologist who saved my life then. My blessing says my life will be protected till my mission is finished.
Wow.
I just don't know what my mission is. So I really want to tell you this. I haven't said this to anybody for a while, so if you don't mind.
I don't mind. Go right ahead. I'm just going to...
Because you're busy.
No, please.
So, obvious reason why she wasn't here today. I wouldn't be able to talk about this if she didn't really feel comfortable.
That's one of the reasons I try to interview people alone.
So, I hadn't been here long and she called and we got together and she apologized and she'd been thinking about her stuff. She'd made a whole new woman out of herself, actually. She was looking at what she needed to do, not what I needed to do, because you need to do this, you need to do that.
Right. Change you.
Just,
now I'm changing.
She just went like that.
Right.
And she's just been a doll. So the doctor, I went to the doctor and he said, well, it's been 10 years. And he examined me and said, I think you have a valve problem. So I need to look into that. So we had an MRI, we had all kinds of things. I do. But it's not operable. And it's not that serious yet. So, you know, I'm looking, if I have 5 more years, that makes me 90. I'm happy, don't you think, to live to 90? Unless I get to 90, then I want 100.
Then you go, wait a minute, you can make it a few more.
So anyway, he got to the point, he said, we need to do an angiogram. Do you know what an angiogram is?
I do.
So I didn't want to do one. I've had 3 others through the years, and they're not
pleasant.
Fun.
Yeah, no.
So I said, okay. The angiogram that I just got out of the hospital, he found that one stent to an artery to the heart, 90%
blocked.
90%. And so it was just feeding, and I've been having some pains up here, and I told him that, and that's why he wanted the angiogram. Long story short, he put a stent inside the scar tissue had filled up. That was what had blocked up.
Where the doctor had nicked you before and sewn it up?
No, that was...
This is a different area.
That was a different area.
Wow.
That was the bypass they did because he sutured it up.
The last time?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He was my leader in the high priest corps.
Okay.
So, anyway, so he was finally able to cut out the cartilage and put another stent in and then broaden, pushing the other stent that was already there up enough to get a flow.
Nice.
That was 2 days ago.
Wow.
Had I not been divorced, meaning had to move
from St. George to here.
From St. George to someplace. Here, obviously, this guy is probably 3 out of a nation that does the stuff that he does.
That's right.
I'm lucky to be with him.
Lucky? Is that luck? Is it?
Yes. So now, saying how blessed we were that we got a divorce and how blessed we are to be back together again and finally get married the first year.
Wow.
So isn't it? Do you see what I'm saying?
I do.
I have so many stories like this.
Well,
so
let me ask you something.
We haven't really begun on this, what I want to say about helping other mission presidents.
Well, that's true. We might have to re-interview for that. But I have some questions for you.
Sure.
So you were mission president at the MTC in 83-86.
Probably, then.
Roughly. And after that, you were at BYU for 10 years.
Uh-huh.
That's a long time. Okay, so...
Then after that, I got a call from Bob Wells. Elder Wells.
Elder Wells. Oh.
Elder Robert E. Wells.
Yeah.
We've been friends for 40 years. He was my file leader when I was mission president.
He was your what leader?
File leader. Back then they didn't have area presidents.
Wow, what's that mean?
He was my guy that I had to get permission to. He was my leader.
He was your guy. He was your contact.
He called and said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm bored to death at BYU." And he said, "Well, we need somebody. You want another story?" You don't.
I do. Go ahead.
Go on forever and ever.
Well, actually, I do. I have a few specific things to get to, but yeah, I want to hear everything.
Give me guidance and I'll just follow.
Well, there are some things about the MTC that I wanted to ask you about. I lived in, as I told you before, Embraer, and I worked in. I was at the MTC in 84, and you were my mission president.
No wonder you're so talented.
Is that why? Is that right? The last several years, I've worked as an addiction specialist.
As a what specialist?
Addiction.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, I worked in court for a number of years, mostly getting people with drug and alcohol addiction issues to treatment. Yep, those are some of the things that I dealt with for a very long time. But some of the things that I understood or that I came to learn about that is addiction is a disease. And the things they do to get the alcohol, for example, most of my clients were addicted to drugs. The ones who were really guilty of shoplifting took high doses of Xanax. Now, explain that to me. Do you know what Xanax is?
Yeah.
Like an anti-anxiety. Well, they start taking the Xanax, and they go and they start shoplifting. And they have no idea they're doing it. I don't know why. But every time I'd go to court, and the judge would say, "Hey, could you come up here? We've got a... Could you do an assessment on this guy? He just shoplifted nail polish." Like, nail polish? I'd talk to him, and he'd say, "Wow. Yeah, I don't know, I didn't hear it." "Well, why did you steal nail polish of all things?" "I don't know. What were you taking?" "Xanax." Okay. So anyway, we've got a lot of people to treatments. One thing I learned is that people, when they have some kind of an addiction, like my stepfather was violently sexually abusive. And you and I talked about that at the MTC. And
we did?
Yes, we did. Yeah.
Where's my bad memory again?
Here's your bad memory. Anyway, yeah, you helped me understand that it wasn't my fault, which was really amazing. But you also kind of groomed me a little bit. And you took me down into the basement. It wasn't really a basement, but it was downstairs, a little storage room.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not angry with you, because I think...
You ought to be.
Well, maybe, but I'm not. I'm over a lot of things that have happened to me, but you hurt me. And I need an apology.
Well, I apologize from the depth of my heart. I can't remember what it was, but I'm...
Okay, let's go back a little bit, and I'll tell you, because...
Well, yeah, tell me.
I have struggled for 33 years of what you did to me, and I am only interested in an apology. I reported what you did to me to Elder AC. Do you remember him?
Oh, yeah.
Corman 70, did he ever talk to you?
No.
Did anybody from Salt Lake ever tell you that you were accused of sexual assault?
No.
You were never disfellowshipped, had a counsel?
I felt I'd repented. I confessed.
Oh, was it, you confessed about me?
I don't know about, I confessed all of my sins to Robert Wells when I was in the mission. But anyway, let me apologize.
Well, all right. Well, I have needed that for a long time, but let me just carry on a little bit.
Sure.
What you did to me destroyed my faith and testimony in priesthood leaders and in the church.
Wow.
you took me down. You don't remember taking a sister missionary downstairs into the basement? Okay, let me say this. I need honest time, and, you know, it's a long time ago. 33 years ago is a long time. I need an apology, and I need an admission, and I need to know what was ever done, if anything. Because I have carried this, and it has destroyed my life.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you remember the room in the basement?
I do.
Do you remember the movies in the basement? The DVD or the VHS player and the TV? No. Do you remember tearing my blouse, pulling up my skirt, ripping the back of my skirt and trying to rape me? But you didn't because you didn't have a full erection. You don't remember that?
No. Let me tell you what I do remember.
Okay.
Do
you know who I am?
No, I don't. Are you... Yeah, I do.
I threatened to kill you in 2010.
Yeah, you had some biker friends?
No, biker friends, God no.
You had, you came into the mission. Tell me your name. Your last name back then. You came in to the mission, and you had had a tough life.
And you know that because
inside
we had conversations.
Yeah.
Correct. Yes, that's correct.
You went over. You went over to the temple. Had your picture taken? Was that?
No.
Okay.
You gave me permission to go to the temple because I had been raped and had a baby out of wedlock.
Okay, I remember that.
Gave the baby up for adoption through LDS
services. I remember that.
Okay.
Okay, I'm glad to run into you again.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
Why?
Well, you think that that kind of thing doesn't affect me also. Because here I am balancing. I'm telling you some very deep spiritual experiences that have happened to me.
And I believe those.
They're true. I don't know how the Lord is so forgiving, but I had an addiction.
Yes, I know that now.
Do you?
I didn't know that then. We don't recover from those things.
Well, mine was different. Mine was, as a young boy, I didn't have a sister, so I didn't know anything about girls.
Because she died.
And I didn't grow physically.
Oh, so you were always small?
Always.
Oh, yeah, I was too.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, I didn't even have breasts on my mission. It was after my mission or into my mission that I developed breasts. Yeah, I was so far behind.
Well, this affected me in a funny way. I felt...
Do you mind if I don't write this down? I'll just set this aside.
I hope today Yeah, I don't care about that right now.
This I care about,
yeah.
But yes, thank you.
Okay. No, it's a healing thing. I want us both to heal some more.
Well, I need to show some compassion, which has been difficult for me.
Did you know who I was when you came here to do
that? Oh, yes. That's why I came here.
Oh, really?
Oh, well, that's part of the reason. The other part is, yeah. No, yeah, that's part of the reason. I have not healed. I reported this to Salt Lake when I came home from my mission before I got married in the temple. They sent Elder AC to me. Elder AC interviewed me. He said he would talk to you directly. never heard anything. Probably Elder AC didn't interview you. No one ever said, hey, what about this woman you tried to rape at the NTC? Nobody ever said that? No. So, is it a cover-up?
Well, I don't know.
What do you know?
I know that I had an addiction. I know that I was forever... When I was in high school, I was a little short kid, and I invited a short girl to go to a dance. And she said to me...
A church or a school dance?
This is a school dance.
Yeah.
She said, come back and see me when you go out.
Oh, I'm so sorry. It affects us.
But I have this thing about... Mm-hmm. I'm a sexual addiction. What can I say?
But did you get treatment?
No.
So what did you... How do we...
I kept fighting and I kept trying to pray and this and that and everything else to get over it. I now feel healed in the sense that I am not tempted. Did you notice what I did when you came in?
Shook my hand?
No, I opened those...
I didn't notice that, but it's fine.
Well, I just so you know, I don't put myself in
a position to be.
Positions.
Let me tell you some of the things that you did in the NTC, and I made closure. I'm not angry, but I am a broken woman because of the things that you did. Okay, one of the things you did was you told me that you and other leaders, and I didn't know what leaders meant at the time. Would go to a place, and I don't know if it was a hot tub or hot springs, in Wyoming. Did you remember that?
No.
Has that ever happened? Why would you tell me that then?
I don't know.
Okay. There was a woman in the hot tub or at the springs or whatever with you and these other people who took her bikini top off. You remember that?
I had an experience similar to that, but it wasn't in a hot tub.
What was it in? What was it?
It was in Utah. It wasn't in Wyoming.
Do I have my areas mixed up?
Probably. Because okay. That's only... It did happen.
But that did happen. Oh, so maybe it was Utah. Okay. How about this one? You told me that...
Was I trying to titillate you?
I believe so. You were grooming me. Is what you were doing. And there was another girl. We'll talk about her in a minute. You told me that you liked it when you and your wife, apparently, had dinner alone, candlelit dinner, and she had this...
Particular dress.
Yes! And you liked it when she pulled it down over her breast and exposed her breast at dinner.
Yes.
Okay. But... Okay, so your addiction was the problem. I understand that. I understand that more than you know, only because I worked in substance abuse addiction.
Well, the other side of it was not...
Okay, you know what? We don't need to talk about it. Okay. The fact that I was a missionary and you were my mission president and you were sharing that was the problem.
That's true.
Yeah. So, but you had that storage room. Why did you take me down there? And why did you do what you tried to do?
I think at that time I was still very much addicted.
You were really struggling?
Oh my. I have struggled my whole life. On this very issue.
With no counseling, no way of making a change of behavior.
I used to say to myself all the time, I'm a hypocrite.
You were?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, damn right you were.
Okay, now where can a hypocrite go?
Oh, yeah. So you try to change your behavior?
I'm trying to solve it myself.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to think of this. I'm not going to, you know.
So you try your own kind of mind control where you focus on the appropriate things and try to set aside the things.
All of those things. All of those things.
So how many other women are there? How many other missionaries, how many other young women in the church have been destroyed like me? I'm not a member of the church anymore. I haven't been for years. Oh, please. You know,
because of me?
Partly because of you. You know, my stepfather was a pedophile, but he was not Mormon. I joined the church. I lived a very good, very healthy life. Went on my mission. All I wanted to do was serve the Lord. That is all I wanted to do. And you singled me out the very first day. The very first day you asked me to bear my testimony. And then the next time the missionaries met, you asked me to give the prayer. And then you were calling me out of class. And I was, the other missionaries were accusing me, calling me teacher's pet, and I can't remember who were those ridiculous things. But I was so flattered. I thought I was so special. And you told me that I was special, that even though I had been abused, that the Lord loved me, and that I was going to be amazing.
I remember that.
I wasn't amazing. I was nothing. I was no one. I was just a missionary. I was just like all the other kids, well, 21-year-olds, 19-year-olds, trying to serve the Lord. And you took that away from me. And then you tried to rape me.
That part I don't remember.
How convenient. I need closure.
I'm not trying to be convenient. I'm trying to be honest.
Okay, Joe, I need closure because I have options that I just want this to be over between you and me.
I appreciate that. I do.
So did you, when you talked to Brother Wells and you repented, did you talk about this?
Yes.
You talked about what you did with me and other women?
Yes.
How many other women are there?
It's not that there's so many other women. It's just the few that were there, few. I remember one when I was in the bishopric.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was so long before you were a missionary, a mission president.
That was.
Oh, my God.
And I remember you.
Do you remember the other girl with me?
Pardon me?
Do you remember the other girl with me? The other one you were grooming? Her name was... Yes, that's her last name.
I remember...
Did you molest her?
Yes.
Did you apologize?
Oh, yes.
To her?
Yes.
Directly?
Yes.
Well, where the hell were you when I reported... Why did you not ever...
Let me go back to the... and make sure I get it all out and all straight.
Please.
I had a thing going with Elder Acey. There were sisters. This is another thing that happened to me.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. Okay. Please tell me. I'm sorry anything happened to you.
Well, it wasn't... Well, it did, but... When I became president of the MTC, I found that sister missionaries would come in, and in that environment, praying every day, and trying to do everything that I said or other people said or the church said, pretty soon they'd have flashbacks of being molested.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I can see that. I can see that because you are who you are, and you're on this pedestal, and the Spirit is really strong. Regardless of how worthy the vessel, the Spirit is really, really strong in the MTC. Oh, so what happened?
Had been molested, or maybe she hadn't been. I never could quite tell.
She was.
Okay.
You and I and she talked about it all together in the same meeting.
Did we?
Yes, sir.
Anyway, I was thrust unwittingly and unwantingly into a work with
women like me.
Women who had been harmed.
Traumatized.
Traumatized.
And I was not strong. The last person that should have been in that situation was me. I shouldn't have been in that position. But anyway, there I was. Tried to commit suicide there at the MTC. I had asked Elder AC on several occasions, well, several, maybe twice, I needed a budget increase for a counselor for these women. And he had heard Elder Packer give a speech to bishops, I think. Or maybe it was a conference address, but he said, Elder AC's interpretation of this was, don't go to counselors, professional counselors, when you have a bishop. Go to a bishop.
A bishop who is not even qualified to deal with that kind of trauma?
Well, I don't know the speech. I didn't read the speech.
Okay.
Elder AC, I found out later that that's what he had heard, and so he reported to Elder Packer. And Elder AC wanted to do what Elder Packer wanted.
Okay.
And so I'd asked for help to get me out of it and get somebody in there that was qualified to handle the situation. And I got turned down. In this process, up on the second floor of that one building, threatened to jump out head first on the cement two stories down. They called me. I was able to talk her down off that ledge.
Okay.
And I was angry at Elder AC. And I got in the car and I went to Elder AC. And I said, okay, do you understand what just happened? And if someone commits suicide in the MTC because they didn't have special counseling, then it's on you. It's not on me, because I'm now asked for the last time that we need to get a counselor. And he then took that. Because of the seriousness of the situation, she tried to commit suicide. Well, I don't know. Wouldn't you say that's trying to commit suicide when you're up there and threatening to jump off? Or whatever it was serious.
All right.
It was serious. And he got me money. And I found Brother, I think this is him. He was excellent. He recommended that not go on the mission, but work there in the MTC, and she ended up living with us.
Well, when did you molest her?
When she was living with us.
Oh, God.
I want to tell you about this.
Please do.
Because I
felt,
well,
have you?
Came in, and she wanted her back rubbed. And I rubbed her back. And that got too
Christy.
Much.
Yeah.
Christy. And that's all that ever happened with but that was I must have that, you know, that was hard on too.
So did your wife know?
No.
You were never called into a church council, church court, even after you confessed to Elder Weld? There was never disfellowship meant nothing?
No, I had confessed all those things before Elder Wells, but wanted to redo it. My struggle to make sure that everything was taken care of.
And transparent.
Yeah.
And isn't part of the repentance process, you say you're sorry to the people that you wronged,
mm-hmm.
and you've never said you're sorry to me. Why? I contacted the church over the years several times. Yes, about you. I want to know what happened. Did he admit it? Was he sorry? Did he deny it? Did he call me a liar? Yeah, absolutely. And this last year, I contacted my state president and where I live. He said, he cried. He said, you know what? That should have never happened. Let me find out. It's been a year. Nothing. So here I am. Because I want an apology, and I appreciate your honesty, except
I find it very odd that you remember details about everything except the basement and what you did to me there.
What I remember about the basement was different.
Oh?
Uh-huh. You had had an operation, a breast enhancement?
No. No. I had no boobs at 21 years old.
Well, we talked about it because you had no boobs at 21. I thought you had any...
Why would we talk about having a boob job at 21 and you thinking I have a boob job when I have no breasts whatsoever?
Yeah.
Okay. I wore padded bras, so I think your understanding was...
Anyway, that's what I remember about that, honestly.
Okay. I
want to ask a question.
Please, I will answer you directly, straight away, God's honest truth.
I want you to know today that I'm so sorry, and I want to be so honest. I want all of that.
Before you die, to be done?
Before I die, to be done.
I feel that way too.
Yeah, I don't have anything left of me, of desire, of that. I'm still cash, very, very careful now in my relationships.
I appreciate that. I do, and I respect that.
Well, let me just... You wanted an apology. I want to give you an apology. I don't know what else I can do about it because of here we are after all these years. But it just hurts my heart to see you suffering, and I've suffered. I understand because it's a two-way street. I have suffered, not like you.
You know, it's funny. I told you a story. I don't know if you remember this, so I'll remind you, and you can tell me if you recall this. My stepfather was a pedophile, which you
I remember
know.
That.
Yes.
I remember you telling me that.
When I was in fourth grade, I went to the hospital with asthmatic bronchitis, and I got on the table. They had to bring in the defibrillator thing, and it floated above my body, and I saw my stepfather and my mother. My stepfather was crying. I remember thinking, why is he crying? And I'm watching my body, I'm looking around. I can tell you every freckle on that doctor's head. And then a nurse.
How old were you?
In fourth grade. I don't know. How old was that? 8.
Oh, my goodness.
So, 9? I don't know. I followed them, and I just followed them. And they went into this room, they closed the door, and I went right through the door. It's called the cry room. It said on the door, cry room. And I remember my stepfather was crying, and I remember thinking, why is he crying? He doesn't even like me. Why is he crying? And for one nanosecond, I felt his pain. And it was horrible. This guilt, this self-loathing, this absolute gut-wrenching, I hate myself. I couldn't bear it. My little spirit was just too tender. And I went right back to my body. And I never forgot it. And that's why I was able to forgive him. Because I'd rather be me than him. So the truth is, even though you tried to rape me and you couldn't get a full erection, you still...
I don't remember that.
Well,
it's terrible.
Yeah, that was pretty damn terrible. But I'd rather be me than you.
I would rather be you than me.
I have had real serious issues with priest holders ever since. My husband was unfaithful, and I figured, you know, maybe it's just... me. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just a magnet for men who take advantage of vulnerable women. You did that. I don't know how many women there are, but if this story went public, you would be the Harvey Weinstein or Weinstein or whatever the hell his name is of the Mormon Church. True?
I would be.
Yes, you would be.
Yeah, I would be.
How many women have you apologized to, at least? Obviously. Is she still alive? Did she ever...
I haven't. She contacted me. She did what you did, appropriately so. She made an attempt to find out. Anyway, I had a conversation with an authority called me.
Who?
Somebody in the church. I don't remember the name.
Okay. It was a long time ago.
Yeah. Years and years ago. And she had made the same thing that you had done. She confessed. She had her problems too. But mine was the big problem, I think.
You think?
Because she had others that did things to her that I didn't do to her. I mean,
but you know what? We're not talking about... Wait a second. I understand addiction. I do. I understand apologies. And I understand compassion, which I am throwing out there for you. But don't pour me. Had her own situation. I had my own situation. Her childhood and my childhood were very, very similar. But that has absolutely nothing to do with what you did to us.
I agree.
And it is not just me. And though you may have just rubbed her back and she reported it, there is no way in hell what I reported and Elder Acey came to talk to me about never got back to you. Unless there is some kind of cover-up at the church. So I want to know the truth. I want to know what the fuck happened. That's what I want to know. And I need an answer, and I need an answer today.
I can only surmise, but I surmise with you. I don't know if the word cover-up is the right word. I don't know what happened, but Elder Acey never talked to me about it. That's the truth. Others have.
About me?
No.
About other women?
Yes.
Who talked to you about other women?
A bishop in Florida.
And who was the woman?
She was a friend of ours who... she made a swimsuit that she wanted to show us, me and another guy. I don't remember. I'm trying to be very honest about this.
I can see that and I appreciate it, but I'm really pissed off right now. So if I'm angry or if I'm aggressive, I apologize.
No, that's okay. I understand. All I'm feeling is pain for you, the pain that I've caused.
You have no fucking idea the pain you have caused me and other women. You have no idea. No idea.
I can only believe what you say.
When you have an addiction and you recognize that you're doing things to young, vulnerable women, broken women, who are looking only to make their lives better and serve the Lord, you take advantage of us and you just stay. Not only do you stay in that calling, you go on to take other callings. You accept callings from the brethren without saying, you know what, I don't think this is a good time for me. Or, oh, I don't know, I have molested or tried to rape some of my missionaries. How many of the sisters in Argentina?
No.
Oh, please. You were so brazen with me, that was not the first time. That was not the first time. How many other are there? How many? If this goes public, how many women are going to come and say, oh my God, me too? How many?
Point well taken.
Okay, I know the point is well taken. I want to know how many. I want to know that I am not the only one. I want to know that I am not the only one.
You're not the only
one. I know I'm not the only one. How many are there?
When I was a young missionary in Argentina, I forgot about that friendship. There was a lady then. I went to the mission prison, halfway confessed, didn't tell him all that had happened. So I can't blame him for not getting at me because I wasn't forthright. There was nothing. Then when I was in Florida, there was this lady I just told you about.
In Florida, how old were you?
Married man.
Before Argentina? Before your mission presidency in Argentina? Or after? Or do you remember?
That was before.
Okay. And what did you do with her?
She showed me her sunsuit, which was revealing.
Revealing her breasts? Revealing everything?
No. It's just a skimpy sunsuit.
Why did she think it was okay to do that?
Because she... I don't know. She was into part of the problem. I know you don't want to talk about it, but part of the problem was there was no sex in our life.
You told me that in the MTC.
Yeah, okay. So that was the motivation always of things titillated me that...
That normally wouldn't have if you'd had a sexual relationship with your wife.
Well, I don't know. I'd like to think that a normal relationship would have done it. But I did go into therapy a few years later. I forgot about that. And what I learned there was that this drive that I had, pretty strong, pretty solid addiction, and that the fact that I didn't have a normal life was part of the problem. I don't know how big a part, but I do know it's there. It was there.
You, with your addiction, was a predator. You were a predator. You preyed on women, vulnerable women, broken women, women who you thought were not strong and could not or would not. You told me that nobody would believe me.
I did?
Yes, you did.
I apologize for that.
I forgive you. But I think you were right.
It's big of you. I'm serious.
You know, it's not... Let me just say something. Everything out here is very transparent on the table. If I had not had the childhood I had, if I had not been a victim of sexual abuse as a child, what you did to me would have absolutely traumatized me. It didn't. It did. But not in the way that it should have, because I thought, well, this is just one more thing, one more time being raped, one more penis in my vagina. So for me, that and the fact that you said no one will ever believe you, look at you. You said, look at you, look at me, look at you, look at me. And I went to my room and I pretended I was sick and I just laid there, didn't cry. I cried on my way out, but I didn't cry. And I just thought, oh my God, I am nothing. I am no one. Nobody loves me. I am not lovable. You were on this pedestal. You were this amazing, you singled me out. I felt so special. I thought I was special. I wasn't. You were a predator. You groomed me. You preyed on me. And then you took advantage of me. And because you were so brazen with what you did, I knew I wasn't the first one, and I knew I wouldn't be the last one, but I never said a word. I went on my missions, pretended somebody in the fucking parking lot tried to rape me because I was having an anxiety attack and I didn't want to tell anybody. I didn't tell anybody. Went home. I didn't go home really much. Stayed with some Mormon family. He sent me to see some therapist who was I don't even know who he was, but he was so fucking arrogant. All he talked about was himself. What he kept saying to me was, you have a secret. You have a secret. I'm like, yeah, damn right I have a secret, and I am not telling you. I didn't like him. If I'd liked him, I would have told him. I didn't. I didn't tell him. Went back out in the mission field. I've never been the same since. Never been the same since. And I have...
You do?
Yes, I do. I have...
And I'll tell you, if you ever touch one of them, I would kill you. Do you know I threatened to kill you back in 2010? Nobody ever called you and said, oh, by the way, this woman who accused you of raping her is threatening to kill you, so you should probably hide. No? Well, I called Salt Lake. I finished my in Utah, and I called Salt Lake, and I said, you know, doesn't matter. Not important. I had my youngest daughter with me. She was 4 years old at the time. I called Salt Lake, and I said, look, I need answers. It's been a very long time. Here's his name. Here's what he did. What happened? You know what they told me? You're not entitled to know. I said, I'm not entitled to know? Was there a counsel? Was there a court? Was he excommunicated? Disfellowshipped? What? You're not entitled to know. I said, really? Well, you know what? I have a gun. And I do have a gun. I was trained in it. I had a gun. Not with me. This is. I said, I know where that bastard lives. I will go shoot that bastard myself. A few minutes later, guess what? The cops show up. And I said, I was in the mission training center, and the mission president sexually assaulted me. It's still on record. I just checked before it came here. Mm-hmm. Never got an answer. Last year, I talked to my state president. I said, you know, can you just get me some closure and answer something? Why has the church never spoken out? There's a recent article in the paper in Utah about some bishop in Provo who didn't report something, and the church came out saying, we are transparent. We have a zero tolerance for this. I'm like, yeah, right. Bullshit. And your wife never knew about any of that stuff?
No, she did. Not all of the stuff. But she knew about some of the stuff.
What did she know?
I told her about the lady in Florida.
Florida. Well, that's...
And to some degree, I can't remember.
Because for you, it was rather benign. Those things happened to you. Wanted a massage from you. But what about the way where you behaved as the predator? You never told her about that?
Well, yeah. When you talk about giving a back rub, and that sounds like I'm pretty doing something.
But she asked for it. I didn't ask for it.
No, that's true. She wanted the back rub.
And said what? Shame on you. Go to your bishop. It's okay, honey. I understand because I don't give you any. What? What did she say?
No, she didn't say any of those things. She just quietly went on her way.
Oh.
She didn't love me.
My husband didn't love me either. But that's not an excuse to behave that way.
No.
So...
They don't know about me.
They might soon.
Well, it's up to you.
It is up to me. It's a shame, all the work that you've done in the church, all the wonderful things you've done for people.
That's a big question I've always had in my mind. Why? I mean, I have this marvelous patriarchal blessing. I've had all these marvelous things happen to me. Like I'm still alive and I'm still, you know, I'm still watched over. It's like the Lord is with me and He knows my suffering, but I haven't been able to conquer it. Right now I don't. For several years I've not felt that there's any problem with I can control it. I don't have any desire. I don't have anything left of that. That I can tell you.
That is very good to know.
That's what?
Very good to know. It's very good to know.
It's not.
I don't consider you a pedophile because I was. Sounds like the women were women. And that you have not approached children.
That doesn't. No. No, that thought is abhorrent to me. But that doesn't excuse me.
No. Hell no. There is no excuse. And a criminal defense for you would, well, it is what
I would be excommunicated and abject would be in.
What? The church would be in what?
Embarrassed.
Well, they should be embarrassed. They should be ashamed. They should be ashamed because there is not... There are other women out there that have had the same experience with you. And there are others out there that have had the same experience with other priesthood holders. And you're not the only one. You're not. You're not special that way. You're not singled out that way. There are other men that have the same problem you have, for example. Other priesthood leaders, I'm sure. But you know, the position for me is, okay,
you need closure. You want to know what to do with this.
Yeah.
I want you to have closure. I hope I don't get excommunicated because of it. I can tell you that if I were to go to today, my lovely...
To be wife again?
And tell her that would ruin our relationship. This isn't a threat or a pleading. I need to be responsible for my actions.
I agree.
But I don't know what else to do. I'm so sorry. I cannot. You think I'm just saying this? I'm not.
I have been single for 25 years.
Because of this?
Yes. I raised my children as a single mom. For 25 years.
It's hard.
It was very hard. It's still hard. I don't trust the priesthood. I believe in the atonement. I believe in the Savior. I believe in the Book of Mormon. I do not believe in the church. I do not believe that
you believe in the gospel.
I believe in the gospel. I do.
I have.
I believe in repentance. I believe in that whole process. I find it absolutely appalling that Elder AC would not have sent someone to talk to you, or that he didn't talk to you directly about the accusations I made, which, had I gone to the police at the time, nobody this entire time has ever said, hey, guess what? You need to report that. I was so afraid that I would ruin somebody's testimony. Yeah, guess what my mission president did?
It's true.
I'm not worried about that anymore. I am not worried about any of that anymore.
Do you want retribution?
I do. I want compensation. I want somebody to say, oh my God, all these years we thought you were nuts, but you weren't.
No.
No, I wasn't.
Well, here I am before you.
Okay, well, I hope you have a good criminal attorney. Because you're going to need one.
Sorry to hear that.
Well, I have no other choice.
Oh, you do, but I understand.
What choice do I have? To be compassionate and get up and walk away. I do have that choice. But then, what does it do for me? I've already forgiven you. I have closure. You admitted what you did. But there are so many other women who probably would benefit just as much who don't have the guts I have. But you know what? I have not had the courage, the moral courage, to stand before you until now. I tried. I threatened your life.
it wasn't serious, but I just turned it on. I wouldn't have shot you. I wouldn't shoot you now.
Or you just did.
Well, the arrow was the arrow of truth. The bullet was a silver bullet of truth. And that's where we're at. So where to go forward, I don't know.
I need to accept all that's there. My concern, I don't know if I can say this without you misunderstanding.
Okay, but
my concern is the pain that's going to take place with all of my family who love me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have 5 sons who will be devastated. Their wives will be devastated. My grandchildren will be missing. My great-grandchildren. The whole legacy.
Your whole legacy is fucked.
Because, see, I'm trying in my way to do these things to pay. I don't know if this is, I'm not saying this right, but I'm working with my grandchildren. I'm telling them stories and faith promoting stories because I'm trying to say I'm not that guy anymore. I'm not. I know that. But you don't know that.
I don't believe that. I think maybe you are not able at this point to do what you did. And I think that after at least, 75 years, you have reached a point where you're actually in more control than you were.
No, that's not accurate.
You're not in more control than you were? It hasn't taken you this long to kind of...
It's taken me a long time.
Okay.
Good fun because she had a husband that was not faithful.
Mm-hmm.
And so she would say to me, "You're flirtatious." And I'd say, "I'm not flirtatious. It's just my personality."
Wait a minute. Do you know how many times you touched my hand in this meeting? 3 times.
In today's meeting?
Yes. Do you know how many times you looked at my breast? 3 times.
No.
Yes, you did. Yes, you think I'm not paying very close attention to your...
I don't see that at all.
Well, that's convenient. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. So...
You say you're flirtatious, and I would say, no, I'm not. Then one day, I woke up. I don't know what woke me up, but I guess it was... I developed a strong, strong love for her. She loves me dearly, and I love her dearly. And that makes me sad, because that's going to disappear also, if you know this. But it did, something happened to me. Something happened to me. I don't know if it was a gift from God or what, but just like that, the desire was gone. I don't think I looked at your breast today.
You did.
Okay. I don't do that.
Once you looked at them at the point when we were talking about, you said that I had a boob job in, or I had a breast augmentation, or whatever it was at the MTC. You looked at me then, but you looked at me 2 other times, once before that, once after. It doesn't matter. It's a habit. You are flirtatious. You are gregarious. That's part of your charm. And that's part of how you have...
That's exactly what I came to realize.
Yes.
There was that realization and realization that put us back together again.
Your charm?
The realization that I had used, wittingly or unwittingly, my charm for the wrong reasons.
Well, you've always been very handsome. You're still handsome at 85 years old. But...
Irrelevant.
No, it is relevant. Because an ugly man cannot do what you did.
Well, somewhere along the line.
Oh, that is Harvey Weinstein. No, he's not very handsome, is he? Yeah, well. All right.
Somewhere along the line, in this divorce thing, I had to say and recognize something that I didn't recognize before, and that was that I was flirtatious. And that leads to every kind of, can lead to every kind of things.
Can.
So that realization and loving me has brought me back to sanity in this area. I now recognize addiction. I do. I remember the first time that this, I was maybe 8 years old, 6 years old even, and there was this girl next door, and she was in the swinging back and forth, and I was intrigued at that age, and that just grew from there, just grew.
Isn't that normal, though?
For a 6 or 8
year old.
I don't know, but it wasn't normal. I have friends who are not this way.
Oh, most people are not this way.
I had a hard time understanding that.
That they're not this way?
Yeah, because I thought that I was normal.
Right.
I thought it was.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Can we tip over the table?
So.
Now let's go back to you for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how else to say it, and I'm not saying this casually. I'm pained. I'm so sorry. I am so, so sorry. I'm not just saying that out of fear. I don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what's going to happen. But I am so sorry. Is terrible. It's me. It wasn't you. It's not a defense, it's just a recognition that I had and I have. Well, I don't think I have. I think I'm over it, but maybe not. I may be five. All of my stuff is gone. I can't. I had an operation that took away incontinent. Is that the right word?
Yes. And you can't get an erection? Yes? Erectile dysfunction, I think, is the word.
Well, whatever it is, I've been able to accept my lot in life. And that's taken away a lot of stuff, too, because there's no sense in fussing around. It's just embarrassing. But let's go back to you. I just want you to know, for what it's maybe worth or not worth to you, that I am very, very sorry. I am so sorry. I don't know if I can ever be forgiven on the other side.
I don't either.
I don't.
I don't either.
I worry about it all the time.
You should worry about it.
I do. But what else can I do? I've done everything I possibly can.
Bullshit, you have not.
Well, I knew you'd say that, but I can't think of anything else I need to do or could do.
Okay, let's just clear the plate for just a minute then.
Sure.
Could you not confess? Could you not? Bullshit! Hi, I took a sister missionary down into my special room that had a bed and a TV and VCR and tapes, and I tried to rape her. Of course, I didn't get a full erection, so I couldn't completely penetrate, but, you know, did you admit that?
I don't remember that.
Oh, my God. All right, well, it doesn't matter.
Well, what? I think it does, and I do not remember that. And maybe it's just because my mind doesn't want me to remember that. But I don't remember that. That's not an excuse. That's just a...
So then, that, because you don't remember that...
I can't say to anybody I did this.
So you wouldn't have said it. So, okay.
I guess it's tucked away. Maybe it'll come out like it did with the sister missionaries when they get in the right environment.
Maybe.
I don't remember that, and now I'm worrying about what else don't I remember.
Well, I think that's a pretty good thing to worry about, because...
Well, it's a big thing for me. I worry about it all the time.
You should worry about it, because you have very little time left here, and this is supposed to be the time that we... repent, and we say we're sorry, and we try to make amends, and we try to make up for, you know, whatever it is we did, or whatever.
All right.
I went through years of therapy.
I'm sorry.
Well, I guess we're done here.
This is a sham.
No, this isn't. No. No.
It changes everything for me. Up to date, I've been trying to say the gospel is true.
Mm-hmm.
I have some feelings about church also, that I trust with.
Mm-hmm.
Had an experience that I'll tell you about. I was with my son in Costa Rica last week. He is on his third, he just divorced his third wife. And we had some really good talks. And he asked me about, do you believe the Book of Mormon is true? And I said, because I know other people have tried to talk to him, just go at him with the church approach. And he said, do you know the Book of Mormon is true? And I said, well, what I know is the following. And then I told him the stories about, I know that your brother, when he was 2 years old, had double pneumonia, and we didn't know he was going to live or die. And I went to the hospital that night after playing for a dance. I used to play for extra money. And prayed when I was alone with him because I thought he was dying. And I was told is the wrong word, this feeling came over me that he was going to be okay. I know that the Lord answers prayers. That I know. I know that President Kimball was a prophet because of, and I told him the story of how President Kimball had interviewed me and not said a word. I felt the questions, I felt the answers going out, and we were there and he was holding me in his arms, knowing it's like a veil came down around us and the people that were in the room were chatting and didn't know what was happening. And the following Saturday, he called me on the phone and said, I just want you to know I'm praying for you, that I love you. And then the following week I was called. It took me out of the situation. I was president of Weber State, and I had reorganized the college because it needed to be reorganized. But
so,
there was a lot of pain to do that.
Okay, but I am shocked that you have that amazing spiritual experience.
That's my amazing me too.
And then
why?
I don't know, but a year later, because I was at the MTC in January of 1984, and you tried to rape me.
That I do not remember.
We've covered that. Well, is there anyone else that you?
No.
Oh. I have a hard time believing that. Yes. I have a hard time believing that. I do. I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay.
Because I am not, I can't be the first. I'm sure as hell not the last. So, all right.
My point with this meeting was, here's my life.
Mm-hmm.
And spiritual experiences, and then I've done this. All through my life.
I have to say that you, in my opinion, are not entitled to those spiritual experiences.
I agree.
So what the hell?
I don't know. I don't know.
Well, I don't know either, but you did answer my questions, and I understand that you're sorry.
Well, I can't feel the depth of your pain, but I hope you understand that I can feel some of it because I have this thing in my life that has just been...
I have this thing in my life. I went from here, and I've had several, even after
I'm saying I've had I've had these experiences, and then something happens.
Yes.
And then I claw my way out, up and up and up, and then now I'm fine, I'm feeling fine, and I can't forget it. It's always plagued me. But then I'm having another experience. This thing is just another one of those experiences. I said, let's go to church. So I went to church. I like the little branches out of the wood because they're so pure in the sense of there's no, just nice for me. While I was there, I saw in my mind's eye the gospel. It was the primary's turn to give me a little program. So we had these big brown-eyed children with curly hair saying to the teacher, what? And then they'd repeat it, and then they'd sing their songs. And it was this thing like a little world all its own. I saw everybody happy. I saw everybody progressing. I saw a bishop, branch president, and his two counselors, and they were different. Everybody was at different levels, but everybody was happy and progressing. And I said to myself, that's the gospel. That's what happens to the people that live in the gospel. That experience was another one of my highs. I took it aside, said, this is what just happened to me. I see this thing. And I come back and I say, why? I ask myself the same question you ask me all the time. Why? Because I have a lot of them.
I'm sure you do.
I do. And in this process, I have a lot of the other. And not a lot of women, but a lot of bad thoughts, masturbation. It took me a long time to get over that.
I
don't even know
what
said that or not.
I think there are a lot of women, and I think there are a lot of bad things. And if you have forgotten at least that small part,
I did, which makes me wonder what else I might have forgotten.
So it doesn't surprise you that you may have done that.
Oh no.
I don't know what to do with this. I don't know. You know, I wanted to come here and talk to you and have you just say, I am so sorry. And you did, and I appreciate that. But I have another level of responsibility, and that is, what about all these other women? Not just yours, not just the ones that you have perpetrated a crime. This is a crime. This is a felony. This is multiple felonies. Not just the ones that you have perpetrated crimes against, but other priesthood leaders who stand up there in their narcissistic ego and do what you did, and these women have no voice. So I struggle with, do I want to be that voice? And what would keep me from being that voice? And is this enough? I thought this would be enough. I don't know. I don't know now. I don't know that I can just go back to my little life. I don't know.
Well, I don't know what I can. There's something else I can tell. You know, I do look at, oh, please don't do this to my children. To the, you know, I can't think, oh, please don't do that. And then I think, all the suffering I've caused you, if that's the only way out for you, I understand that.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I don't want to cause suffering for you or your children or your grandchildren or all, destroy all of the good things that you've done in your life. But my children don't have a father because I can't trust the priesthood and I cannot trust men. Therefore, I raised my daughters completely alone. So I don't know what kind of damage that is. I can't get my 25 years of being a single parent back. I can't get my innocence from the MTC back. I can't serve a mission and love the Lord and respect my priesthood leaders ever. Probably not in this lifetime.
I see priesthood leaders differently. I see 99% of them as good, God-fearing men.
Bullshit.
And I see a lot of the others.
There's a lot of the others. There are, I wouldn't say 99%.
Well, I don't have, you have a different
perspective. No, you and I have the same perspective. You lived this life of falsehood. You stood up there and smiled, and you were so excited that I was going to come here and interview you because you are so fucking special. And you've destroyed lives to the point that we don't recover. I have not I am 4 years old. I have never recovered from what you did to me. And you stand up there, and you go to work at BYU, and you're a mission president in Argentina, and then at the MTC, and then you take another fucking calling to go to South America to work for the welfare, which they would not have called you had they known you were a predator.
But, what was I to do? That was my, okay, I want to do good. I want to pay for my sins, if you will. I want to do good for people. I want to help them. And in this way, listen to me.
Okay, I want to hear what you have to say. I'm frustrated and I'm angry, but I do want to hear what you have to say. So forgive me for playing with my hair.
See, let's go back to the hypocrite thing. What does a hypocrite do when he wants to be better? The only thing he can do is try to be better.
No.
Well, my position, my thinking through the years is I've got to overcome this.
So that you're not exposed.
No.
Yes.
No.
A hypocrite continues the behavior more secretly, tries to overcome it, and then does it again.
I'm telling you my interpretation of where I was.
That's
fine. Where I was is I had this addiction. It took me a long time to figure out that I had an addiction. But that came, and I found, okay, I've got this addiction. I went to my friend who's a therapist and worked with him and figured it out. Okay, I've got this addiction. Okay, I must overcome that. Okay, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to do this, and this. That led me to this other life. That's what started to pull me out. But every time, almost every time, it hasn't happened. I'm not in that hole now. But every time it was like, I'm just doing all I can do to be better. I wasn't feeling like, oh, that's all I could do. That's the only option I saw for myself. It's okay, I'm not going to do this anymore, I'm not going to do this, and I'll do this, and this. I will serve missions. I will go. I will, anything I can do. I spend the rest of my life. I'd serve 5 missions. Do you think that's all altruistic?
Somewhat.
You do?
I do.
Well, I look at it now and say, what I was trying to do was
make up for all the shit you did?
Well, get out of the hole. Get a new life. Get away to
But you go to the temple unworthy. You go to the temple, and even in the recommend, are you honest in all your dealings with your fellow men?
Yes.
And
let me speak to that.
Oh, please.
Over here, not worthy. Didn't go to the temple. Didn't. Because not worthy. Then I start to feel worthy, and I do some more work. Then, and I've repented, I've done all the things I can do. Now you would say to me, you haven't repented. And I'd say, I understand that.
I understand which, where you come from. But I thought I had.
No, you didn't. Because there's a piece of you, Joe, inside you that says, I'm not done. That's why you still carry it with you. Because you have not completely repented. Your soul is not clean and purged, and it's covered in crimson. That's why you still carry this with you. That's why if you were to die today, you die with all this with you. And it goes with you. Repentance, the repentance process isn't about, okay, I'm gonna tell part of my story to a priesthood leader because I can get away with telling this much and repent and everybody around me will know that I'm trying. Well, the fact of the matter is you didn't really tell everything that you did. You gave little bits and pieces and you covered yourself in a shroud and you walked along, and each time that happened you carried something heavier with you each time you went, because you never told the whole story when you confessed. If you did, you would have been excommunicated. So, did you repent? No. Not the way that the Lord tells us to repent. You didn't say you were sorry. You didn't even tell the whole story. And so there are women like me out there struggling, and you defecated all over us. And you just walked along and you continued serving in the church like we were nothing. We were nothing. We are nothing.
I think you're right.
I think I'm right, too.
I wish you weren't. But I think you are. I didn't think of it that way. I thought I was doing everything I possibly could do to overcome this sexual addiction. Well.
I have worked in addiction long enough that I don't work with sex addicts. I don't. I don't work with pedophiles. I don't work with rapists. I never did. Substance abuse, drug addicts, I don't really understand. The only addiction I've ever had is Excedrin. But logically, I can understand why people would want to hide from their pain. But when we talk about repentance, we talk about making up for what we did and being sorrowful. And you know, part of that process is we say we're sorry. And I've gone 33 years without an apology from you. I've gone 33 years trying desperately to say, okay, well, I love the Lord, and I'm confident he's there for me. But he didn't love me enough to protect me from my mission president. So who am I? What am I? Then I get married, and my husband has 14 women in our 4 years. And then he tells me, and I'm like, okay, well, maybe some of that's my fault. Maybe some of that has to do with my childhood. Maybe some of that has to do with my mission president. And we get divorced. And now he tells everybody there were only 4 women. I'm like, really? Oh, and I didn't have sex with them. It was only oral sex. So did he get excommunicated? No, because he lied his ass off. He covered it up, he smoothed it over, made himself look good. And he blamed me. So, did he repent? Not to what I understand the Lord considers repentance. So you do the same thing, but it's the way that it is. And you are not special this way. You are not singled out this way. If you are not transparent, if you do not really tell the whole story, you carry it with you. Once you tell the whole story, you can let it go, because the Lord takes it away. You've never done that. That's why it's still with you. That's why you walk around with this heavy burden. It's a ball and chain, and it's strangling you.
Yes, it truly is.
Well, it's a ball and chain for me too. And I have no repentance to do. I have no...
Right. It's not your fault.
No, it was not my fault. It absolutely was not, but I have suffered tremendously from it. I believe in the gospel. I believe in the Book of Mormon. I believe in the atonement. I do not believe in the church. And I'll be damned if I'm going to stand in front of some priesthood leader who's going to tell me I'm wrong or that I shouldn't pursue anything. And that's what I've been told this whole time. And I don't know what I'm going to do. So the statute of limitations has not run on this case.
It's not that. I want you healed. I want to be healed. That's the bottom line for me. I want you healed. I want me to be healed. I am not healed. Getting close to it. Love is okay.
Okay, that is the biggest crock of shit I have ever heard. Somebody's love can be healing. I agree with that. But you're going into this relationship and it's false. You're scared. You have this idea in the back of your head that if she knew what you did, if she knew what you did.
I know.
That she wouldn't want you. She wouldn't love you.
She wouldn't.
Okay, well, then it's a crock of shit.
I don't get what you mean. What I said was her love.
Her love cannot heal you if you are not honest with her. She only loves a part of you that she doesn't know.
No, I'm just gazing up.
Oh, she loves a part of you that she knows, the part she doesn't know. Would she love that?
No.
So how can that be healing? How can that be so beautiful and harmonious?
Well, that part, you're right. She would go back into her shell too, I'm afraid. Because it was a man.
Right.
And then now it's happened again. I can see.
And you were the last person she would think would do that. Absolutely.
She said for the first time in a little message to me today, she loves me and she trusts me. She's never said trust me before. That's where I'm.
You don't deserve that title.
I'm trying to be trustworthy.
You have not earned that title. You have lived a lie your whole life. You're 85 years old. You're still living the same lie. Even if I was the only person ever, you've been living the same lie for 33 years. And you're still living it. And it's a pattern. You have a lot of patterns in your life, but this particular pattern is what has destroyed you. And it will destroy you. Because if you're not honest and transparent, you are not repentant. In my opinion, what do I know?
Well, I think you know a lot.
I've lived a lot of years in my short years. Yes, I have.
And I'm responsible for some of that for which I'm sorry.
A large part of that, and I appreciate you saying you're sorry. And I understand, and I forgive that. I forgave it a while ago. I needed an apology. But from here forward, I struggle with where I go.
Understandable.
And I honestly struggle with, do you deserve the legacy that you want to leave your children and grandchildren?
I don't. I don't deserve it.
But? There's a butt clause, I hear it coming. But they don't deserve to be destroyed because of what you did. Yeah. I understand that.
That's the bottom line for me. I don't know what's going to happen to me when I die. I thought I was dying last week, as a matter of fact.
You had to wait for me.
Very well could be.
Because I made this decision to come the day I called you.
Really?
Yes, I did. I just got fed up. I am fed up. Not one state president has responded to me. I made a threat against your life in 2010. They still wouldn't respond to me. I've carried this around for 33 years and I'm done. And not only am I done, there are a lot of women out there who are probably done as well. If my state president had been able to come back to me and say, you know what, let me just tell you, there was a council, and that's all I can tell you. I would have been relieved. But there wasn't even a fucking council. Nobody ever came to you and said, hey, this missionary that was a missionary while you were president of the MTC, up there on your pedestal, has accused you of trying to rape her. What do you say to that? Not true, or yeah, I did, or no, nobody even came to you. And that, to me, is a bigger problem, a much bigger problem. Because that means there are a lot of women around the world, not just here, that are reporting to Salt Lake saying, hey, my bishop, my state president, my whomever has done this or this, and it gets swept under the rug. Well, is that appropriate? I mean, this is the end of days. This is the last days. We are coming to the end of the world. I've been very close to Mayan several times. But if I die today,
you'd be fine.
I am fine. I have little sins. I have a little of this, a little of that. I don't have anything grievous. I don't have anything weighing me down. My life is completely open and transparent. If you like me, great. You don't, I don't care. This is who I am. You either like it or you don't. I'm okay with either way. I'm very transparent. These are the things that have happened to me, although I very rarely talk about you. And I rarely have talked about you to any degree because I've been worried about people's testimonies. And now I think, you know what? That is complete bullshit. I was a coward. I didn't have the guts to confront you. And I'm ashamed of that, which is part of the reason I'm here today. I was ashamed of that. And whatever has transpired over the last 33 years is partly my responsibility because I allowed you to continue with your addiction. I didn't understand it was an addiction then. I only came to that.
Does that surprise you today to figure that out?
Oh, I figured it out when I started working in addiction.
It took me a while.
Well, I have a lot of insight. A lot.
Yeah, I am.
But it's not an excuse, Joe. It's not an excuse for what you did. It's a more... Okay, let me say it this way. There is no excuse for what you did, but there is a reason. Does that make sense? And I don't want to be forgiving of you. I don't want to let you off the hook by saying, oh, you had a disease or you have. That's what it is. It's a disease that went untreated to this day. You're 85 years old. It's untreated to this day. You're self-medicating without medication. You're self-treating.
Sure. I've listened to you and I agree with all you said. Except this thing about, I think I've overcome my addiction.
Okay.
I do.
I hope that is, nobody would know that except you.
I feel for the first time in those 30 something, longer than that for me, that I have been successful. At last, I no longer have those feelings. I don't have the stuff that used to be plaguing me all the time. I don't. It's gone. I don't know how long it's, It's kind of like Alcoholics Anonymous, where they get up and they say, hi, I'm
an alcoholic. I'm Bob. I'm an alcoholic.
Yes.
I'm a 12-step program.
I'm Joel. I'm a sexual predator. Now, then, how long have you been clean from alcohol? X number of years.
3 years, 22 days, and
yeah.
6 hours.
Yes.
Yeah. I use a facilitator.
So that's where I am with this. I am, it's been 3 years, 3 hours, and whatever. And I feel at last. I'm no longer plagued with those
desires. With those desires. Okay. I
don't know if that's true or not.
Well, it's been true for how long?
Well, long enough that it's been a first.
Okay. Well, you know, there are a number of factors that would play into that. One is your age. And the other is that you have worked on it your whole life. You could have been healed from it decades ago and lived the rest of your life free of that. But
right.
Regardless, those are choices you made. Maybe because you didn't have the education, maybe because you felt the shame, whatever reason doesn't matter. You've reached a point in your life where you, first of all, you can't, and you have no desire. Now, whether that's a gift, or that's just...
I have a desire...
biology?
...for intimacy. That's holding somebody tight that I love and loves me. And that's those kinds.
That's normal.
Yeah.
That's normal. Taking a missionary down into the basement to a storage room is not normal.
Yeah, see that?
Trying to rape a missionary is not normal.
No, that today, when you say these things, that's abhorrent to me. That's why I hold.
Well, then there you go. An indicator right there that that part of your life is over.
Yeah, it is important. I think of that and I think, what in the world could, why, what could ever possess me to do that? And I have to listen and say, yeah. But it's important to me now.
So you're basically saying that you're not the same man that you were.
I think that's true.
I think that's fair. I do. I think that's fair to say. I think that's fair to say. But we still have the whole decades of who you were to deal with. So,
yep.
I don't know. I, you know.
I don't think the atonement, you say you believe in the atonement. I'd love to believe in the atonement. I struggle to believe in the atonement, but I don't know if I can be forgiven.
You can be forgiven. You absolutely can be forgiven. You have to be honest. You have to say you're sorry. You have to make amends. You have to try to make up for what you did. You're 85 years old. This what happened with me, because I can't talk about it to anybody else because I wasn't there. But what happened with me was 33 years ago. And I have struggled for 33 years. How do you make amends for that? What is there? What compensation? I mean, I've been through therapy. I've been through counseling. I absolutely resent the priesthood and priesthood holders. Absolutely resent them.
All of them.
Wow.
That's where we differ.
Here's the problem, though. Now, my husband was also a priesthood holder, but he wasn't someone in authority. You were the most a civilian term would not be high-ranking official, but you were the most high-ranking priesthood holder.
That's right.
That I ever came across.
And that makes my sin more grievous.
More grievous, yes. Yes. But it also means that the damage was so much worse. However, what are the sins that we can't be forgiven of?
When we go against the Holy Ghost.
Yes.
What else?
I think that's it too. We can even be forgiven of murder.
My life is so checkered.
Your life is very checkered. But your life is coming to an end. You're luckily you're in your twilight years.
It is.
But I'm gonna live this way, single, for the rest of my life.
Why?
Because I don't trust men now. I don't trust, absolutely don't trust priesthood holders. And I have a 6-year-old daughter. And I am not about to put her in a situation to have someone like you do anything to her. That's a choice. That's a logical choice that I have made.
I think the only error in that thinking is that all men are that way.
It doesn't matter. The men I've come in contact with are. So I am like a freak magnet. So I refuse to let anyone near me.
I see.
I am damaged.
And I damaged you.
Yes. But I'm okay with the fact that I'm damaged. I'm very honest about the fact that I'm damaged. And I've come a long way in healing, but I have absolutely no desire to even pretend, to trust again, ever, anyone. Nope. And I'm okay with that. Is the Lord okay with that? I don't know. But this is my lot in life, and I'm okay with my lot in life. I'm not okay that you're the part of the reason that I'm here, but I do appreciate you taking the time to talk to me and your honesty. I do accept your apology. I don't know if it's enough, but I do accept your apology, and I do believe your apology comes from your heart and it's genuine.
That's one thing I have learned.
What?
I can't be false to you. I can't try to play you using, I don't know what that means, but because the Lord is involved. How I respond to you today must be sincere, must be honest, because I'm going to be judged. Not by use, you'll judge me too. I'll judge myself. But the Lord, one day I'm going to have to answer. And I want to be able to say, yes, she came to me broken. It was my fault. I am so sorry. I am. It makes me want to cry. I don't want to cry.
Crying is healthy. Feel free. Crying is good.
That's why. I mean, 85 and sick. I would be blessed if I have 3 more years. So I'm different. I'm on the edge now of, I know I'm dying. I get the news every time I go to the doctor. Well, we'll try this, we'll try that. Fine. I'll live as long as the Lord wants me to live, because it says so in my blessing. I've learned from my blessing that these things can happen. Each one of these miracles that have come to me at the peak. Not that I asked for it, not that I, it's just like it was organized, okay? I want you to do this. The MTC. I have a dual thing in the MTC. Big dual thing. One side with you. The other side reorganizing the MTC. I mean, that was, I don't know why. I do not understand to this day why I was inspired. But I do know that I was inspired. I do know the things we did there helped a lot. Now that sounds self-serving. But what I don't understand is why the Lord was so good to me when I was so bad to Him and you.
Let me ask you, just kind of throw it out there. Is it possible that maybe the Lord really wanted you to change your life and you didn't, and therefore where you are could be good, but where you are could have been great?
I could have been great. I know that. I was, one time Bob Wells told me that, and it was about the same time this other was going on.
Which other?
You, when you and...
Oh, and...
Yeah. That he had put my name in the hat to become a 70. I was never called. I know why. I know why. Because he may not have done what he should have done with you, but he did what he should have done with me.
Meaning?
I was not ever entitled to be considered to be a general authority.
You should not have ever been considered to be an MTC president.
I told. Yeah, I agree.
Or a mission president.
I agree. That's my confusion.
I'm confused. But you know what? My husband gave amazing Sunday school lessons. Amazing. Tearful. People were tearful. The spirit was really strong. And I didn't realize that the spirit could work through unworthy vessels until then. Now I look back and I think, oh my gosh, he was awful. He had sex with women that he was baptizing. So, and yet his Sunday school lessons were amazing. And the spirit was strong.
I can't do that.
What?
Can't give her. I don't teach anymore. At least I try not to ever get that call in.
You're in the presidency.
Well, the bishop called me the other day and said, gospel doctrine, or over here in the Sunday school, second counselor, over here in the second counselor. I don't want to. I want to do what's right from here on out. That's all I want to do. my way of trying to...
You're avoiding situations that could get you into trouble.
Oh, yes.
And isn't that the same thing that we're taught as missionaries? Avoid, even in the church, avoid the appearance of evil. Avoid just the appearance. If you avoid a situation that could look bad, you're absolutely going to avoid a situation that could turn out to be bad. So yeah, no, I totally get that. I completely understand that. But that's like saying, okay, I'm an alcoholic, and normally on my ride home, I pass a liquor store if I go down 4th Street every day, so therefore...
Mm-hmm. That's exactly a good analogy.
It's not necessarily a bad thing to do when we're weak in that, whatever area that is. For an alcoholic, it would be absolutely, just avoid it. Those triggers, those things that cause you to have that...
That's very true for me. That's where I started with... With all females, I don't.
Yeah.
I was concerned today when you said, "Come to my hotel." I'm not going to put myself. Then you said, "Do you remember Glass and Co's conference room?"
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I can do that. But I'm trying to be wise. I'm not trying to beg or. I'm just trying to do what's right, because it's not you, it's the Lord that's going to judge me, and it's not going to be very far in the future.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm dealing with.
I understand that, and that was part of my reason for expediting my visit.
Thank you. Maybe I'm still in the hand of the Lord, that you did come and my life has been spared. It shouldn't have been. This last door, I'm 90% shut down on that vein, that artery. So that I could respond to you and understand better and beg forgiveness for my sins with you. Which I do. And you know that because I've said it. I'm so sorry. Sorry for me, too. I've lived your life in pain. Not like you. Mine has been like a roller coaster. Most sincerely stated, struggling to climb up here, falling.
I can't even climb up. No, I can't. I'm not kidding. I was up here, and I went down here, and this is where I'm at. But that's okay.
I don't want you down there.
I am down there. There is no other way to be. So, well, I appreciate your time.
So, is there any more of this stuff?
Not today. I'm not sure that I feel...
No, I'm not talking about today.
Oh.
Anytime.
Possibly.
Because I don't want my name out there as a model. Unless it's safe, unless it's helpful. Remember, I started with you saying, I don't want anybody to think of me. I want, if they say anything about these things, I don't want to be self-serving. That's where we started. I don't want my name out there as, I worry about a publication that says my name anywhere. For obvious reasons, I don't feel worthy. I shouldn't feel worthy, I'm not worthy. And yet I've had these things. I've got pages that you could write about the good things that I'm not worthy. So any wonder that I don't want my name out there?
I think you're afraid people are going to find out the other side of you. Doesn't mean this side doesn't exist, but there is this other side.
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
For me and for those who love me. I know what it would do. She's fragile. I know exactly what would happen to her. My kids, I know what exactly would happen to them. I don't want that. I'm so
going to die first.
Well, if you die first,
then I'm in trouble.
Well, yeah, you would be in trouble, but it's more than that. It, just because you die doesn't mean that it's not going to be exposed later. There's no confidentiality, non-disclosure.
So let's go back to repentance. Let's go back to this thing. Lord, I just keep trying to do what's right now, hoping that the atonement, that there's something in the atonement for me. It's a hope. It's not a belief.
You know, people have gone a long way on hope. It doesn't have to be a belief yet. Hope is good. Hope is really good. I don't want to take that hope from you.
It wouldn't be you taking it from me. I haven't. That's, well, it would be a reckoning. Maybe an appropriate reckoning.
Okay.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
See, I'm looking at the next world. What's going to happen when I get on the other side? Well, I'm going to be judged. Am I going to be sent over here or over here? I don't know. Because I have a checkered past. I've tried, this you must understand, I have tried to do what's right. And each time it's like, I really have. And I keep having these experiences, which gives me some hope that, okay, I'm okay. And then I don't know. I don't know.
But is it not a pricking of your conscience every time you think about these other things? Is it not the Lord saying, hey, you have to take care of these things?
I went to my divorce thing. I said, no, I've got to pick up the pieces in my life. And I started dating. And there's this one woman I dated, and she just loved me to pieces. But it wasn't reciprocated. I didn't feel the same about her. But she would have done anything for me. And it was there where I started saying, I'm not worthy of her love, her trust. I'm not. And that was bad. That ended sadly because I had to break it off because I didn't love her and it wouldn't be fair. I thought, I shouldn't get married again. If it's a darn loving, I needed to go to the hospital. I couldn't drive back. I had to have somebody drive me back. It's supposed to be an easy in-and-out procedure. It wasn't. I was there all the time, waiting on me, helping me, loving me, caring for me. And I feel I'm not worthy of this woman. But I do love her. I do love her. It's a love. I love her deeper than I ever loved. In the MTC, there was a group that came by, and they've been doing these inventories of matching people up. And they wanted to extend that into the MTC so we would get companionships that worked. Of course, my position was, we can't do that because then we're not training them out in the field. They're going to get companions that don't work. They need to experience that. You know. But he wanted to do something with me. It's a husband and wife team. So I said, fine, let's do that. I wanted to experience the, you know, went through this thing. About a week later, they came back with kind of tail between their legs saying, we two should never have gotten married.
Wow. Was that a punch in the gut?
It was.
They were right.
Of course.
That's why it was a punch in the gut?
Yes.
Oh. I'm sorry you lived your life that way. I am. That's sad.
I appreciate you saying that. Only one who's been there more than I
can understand that. I'm not even talking. I have, when I've gone to my bishop, I've not thought of this before, but I probably couched things in a way that was reasonable to understand. You know? Whereas I didn't. Here's the worst of the worst of me. Didn't do that. Should have done that.
There's a lot of shame in that.
Well, I now understand. Thank you very much for your talk today, because I'm listening and I'm hearing and seeing me, and it's painful. It really is. But if you're right, and I need to do those things that I thought I'd been doing that probably haven't been doing. When I confessed to Elder Wells in the mission field, do you know why that happened? We had been doing so well in baptisms. We went from 70 a month to double that, to double that, to double that.
This is when you were a missionary in Argentina.
Mission president.
Mission president, okay.
We went from 70 to over 400 baptisms a month.
Wow.
And in the middle of this, I had a sister missionary who was besieged with evil spirits. I've never experienced them before, didn't know they existed, but they do.
I know that.
They attacked me. So, in this process, trying to save my soul, I said, okay, well, I need to tell you everything. And I went back as far as memory could. I think I talked about you.
You couldn't have. Because you were MGC president after Argentina.
I think I...
Okay.
All I can say is I tried to talk about anything that I'd ever done. And he said to me, haven't you said this to some of the bishops? The answer is yes. To this bishop one thing, to this bishop another thing, to this bishop another thing. Now I've got a general authority. I've told you everything. As I like it. I wasn't trying to hide anything at that point.
No, that was a scary time for you.
It was.
Yeah.
Because I could not. And not for any out of that, it's interesting. We were invited over to the dedication of Sao Paulo Temple. All mission presidents in the Southern Cone went to Sao Paulo for this thing. There, you know, the President Kimball was there. He was leading the entourage. We arrived and I was at the end of the entourage. Pretty soon the head met with the tail as we were. And he said, how are you doing? And I said, well, to myself, I'll never get a better chance in this world. I've had blessings from Elder Wells, from the favorite state president. Nothing was working. Nothing. So I said, I am just struggling with evil spirits that attack me and are with me. And he said, cast them out. And he raised his hand, cast them out. I bet he's done that
a time or two.
That's easy for you to say.
Were they gone?
No. I went back that night, well, maybe it's two nights later, but whenever it was, I went back and I even tried to bless myself. It was terrible. I wanted to. And I said to the Lord in my prayer, I prayed, and I said, look, look, it's not the right word.
I know what you mean, though. Yes.
I would like to be relieved from these evil spirits that are with me. And then I said without thinking, but if not, I'm dying. Like they, just like that, it was gone.
Wow.
You're starting to understand it.
Yes. But I do understand this and this and this and this. I've had some amazing experiences. When I was in, we had a temple president there. He lives in Phoenix. We found these abandoned babies. And we were trying desperately to get them into LDS homes. And one baby in particular, I was struggling with, I'm by the family. And I remember I was pacing in my room, and I had just come back from and I was pacing, and my husband said, what's the matter? And I said, I cannot get in touch with this doctor to sign the adoption form. And I can't get a hold of President working with the mission president down in frustrated. And he just ignored me and went back to what he was doing. And I was going back and forth, and I'm like, I'm going to call him again. And I heard this voice, clear as day, clear as a bell, wait. And then later, I found out the baby was not adoptable. He had cerebral palsy. But still, yeah, I've had some really amazing experiences. But I'm still who I am. You're still who you are. I'm not perfect. I'm not anything. I'm nothing special. I'm just me. But yes,
there, well, it was a special experience.
It was a special experience for a very ordinary person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Given from God above.
Yes.
To you.
Yes.
So you're special enough that He spoke to you.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Good point.
That's where I find myself.
But you have so much to do before you go. You have a lot to do in the next couple of years. I need to get back to my room. I've got to see my daughter. I'll be in touch.
You've got my phone call.
Yes. I've got your number. You've got mine. Now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, because I called you and you called me back. So I will give this some thought and figure out what I need to do, what's appropriate, and what is in everyone's best interest, and move from there. And if you come up with anything, you call me.
Well, I can look at some stuff.
What?
You've been pretty clear today about this thing of true repentance.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I'd been doing it. I don't think so now. I think I need to go to my bishop and lay it out.
Maybe.
President.
Your state president?
Oh, he is my state president.
Yes, he is.
But I have to smile. My son had a spiritual experience, and he's all about certain parts of the gospel. So much so, he's the first counselor in the ward, a bishopric.
In his ward, not yours?
We're in the same ward.
Oh, I see.
And President told him to stop and desist from talking about the gospel of, I don't remember what it was. But so, I know President that he talked to my son about, you're spending too much time with born again, which is the, anyway, so I do know him, just that way.
I don't know him. I've never spoken to him.
I have
his number. I have your bishop's number. I've not reached out to anyone. I reached out to you, and I reached out to my attorney. And that's all I've done.
Well,
that's not all I've done. I contacted the police in Provo, who said that the statute of limitations had not run. And if I wanted to pursue a criminal investigation, I could. And my attorney said if I wanted to continue with a private suit, I could. So I have done some background. Not all. But yeah, I didn't come here ignorant. I did some checking before I came.
I came ignorant.
No, you really didn't. You came naive, not ignorant.
Oh, ignorant about, yeah. But
well, if I had said, hi, do you remember me?
Yeah.
You wouldn't have come.
Oh, I would.
I doubt. Well, then I was wrong to deceive you. But only part of this is a deceit.
We're talking about salvations here.
Yes, we are.
Let's not get confused.
Okay.
You've got to be, if I were I need to help you get healed. I need to get healed. I see that as the task. I don't know how yet, but I'm going to be thinking too.
Well, hold off on saying anything to and we'll... My flight leaves in the morning. I will give this some great consideration.
Give it some prayer, too. I believe in prayer.
I believe in prayer. I do.
I don't know what's best either.
Well, you know, there's a lot at stake. There's...
That's the thing that's so overwhelming for me.
Yeah.
This is going to destroy my life, but it would destroy some other lives, too.
Well, you have a whole list of... Yeah, I understand that. I put $4.
It goes back to my missionaries. It goes back to, you know...
Yeah. All right, we'll talk. How's that? I'll talk to you Monday afternoon. Or tomorrow afternoon. I don't know. I have an appointment with my attorney Monday morning. So...
Be careful of attorneys. Now, this is going to sound self-serving, but they want money. So he will want to pursue this.
Okay.
Get your answer from the Lord.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, because a criminal defense lawyer for you would be very expensive. A personal injury lawyer would be very expensive.
He wouldn't get anything because I don't have anything. I lost my savings when the bubble burst. I had all my savings with former missionary, former assistant. They put him in jail later, but I lost everything. If I were able to get married and we could pool our resources and have a good life in terms of being able to go visit her family, my family.
Right, I understand.
I bought a house that's 920 square feet. We remodeled it. Cost $100,000. I got 5%.
Well, it's not about that. It's, you know, what... I know what my attorney wants. I know what the sex crush...
Just be careful with that. I would only say again, get your answer from the Lord. I'll try to do the same. I don't know what to do, but I'm going to try to find out.
You'll know what to do. You'll make the right decision.
I'm getting a feeling right now. Can you go?
Oh my gosh. 2.5 hours. Alright,
I need to go to the bathroom.
Oh, I'm sure there's one right out there.